Welcome to the Data Up Podcast. My name is Brian Ward, the creator and host of the Data Up Podcast. I am a coach, Marine Corps veteran, speaker, husband, and you guessed it, a dad. Are you ready to be inspired to be the best dad you can be for your family? This show will provide you with the tips, tools, and strategies to do just that. Are you a dad just going through the motions? Or are you looking to really elevate your dad game to the next level? Truth is, it is a blessing to be a dad. This is a responsibility we must take seriously. In the end, how do you want to be remembered? I hope you want to be remembered as a phenomenal dad. Your legacy starts in the home, not outside the home. If you're really ready to elevate your dad game, then make sure you bang that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode. Now, let's get started. Dad up.
Welcome to another episode of Dad Up, everyone. Thank you guys very much for joining me. I am really excited about this guest because he and I go way back. I'm talking way back. And when you hear this gentleman, you're going to see that he is he's a grown man. He's a dad. He's a husband. He's a businessman. He's an entrepreneur. And I've known this dude since he was like 14 years old. And it's crazy to think that I'm having him on my show now. But I'm excited to get into the conversation with him about what he's been up to and what he's been doing. And I'm excited for you to hear kind of the story of how we kind of got connected as well. So my good friend, Steven Sterik, has joined me on Dad Up. Welcome to the show, brother.
Thanks, Brian. I really appreciate it, man. And and yeah, life definitely has come full circle. That's for sure. I mean, I met you in the bank in Burbank where you and my dad worked together. And I don't remember the first time we met, but I definitely know that, you know, they had me working there, like on the summer job. I was in there licking envelopes and putting stamps on them and addressing to send to all of the different clients for the bank. And it's a fond memory. But I remember that after that summer, I was like, I never want to stuff envelopes ever again.
Right. Well, let's do this. Before we dive into all that kind of back history and stuff, let's talk a little bit about you, kind of how you grew up, kind of how you got into the things that you're doing now. And then more importantly, this is a dad podcast, so I want to know about your family as well.
Yeah. How I grew up. So I grew up in a middle-class white neighborhood in Thousand Oaks, California. Our family did pretty well, but there were times that were very lean as well. And so my parents were married. My parents were married twice, actually. They got married and then they got divorced in the 70s. Then they got remarried in the early 80s and had me, like 1980, I think. And then they had me shortly after. And my parents stayed together until I was about 12 years old, and then they got divorced. So that was right around 1994. Actually, the 1994 Northridge earthquake, my parents were separated. They were sleeping in separate rooms at the time, or during that time. And I remember it vividly, right? Because it's like such a traumatic experience, an earthquake, right? And I remember, and I'm going to just dive in and share my dad's, you know, little things. God rest his soul, but I think he'd think it would be funny. So the earthquake happens, right? It was like 4 o'clock in the morning. And we all like rush out into the hallway. And my dad is sleeping in the office at the time, since they were separated. He was on some hide a bed or something, some couch. I don't remember. And he stands up and my mom's like, hey, there's an earthquake. Like, you know, come out into the hallway. And as he walks out into the hallway, he looks at all of us and he's like, I'm going. And we're like, where are you going? And he passes out like a wet noodle. He just, I mean, straight to the ground, just like somebody just cut the strings of his.
Is it like shock, you know, or something from the earthquake? Because he's never been in one.
Yeah. It was complete utter shock. Like, I don't know. His blood pressure obviously just like dumped, and somebody literally cut his puppet strings and he just fell straight to the floor. Anyway, he woke up a minute later, and then, you know, and everything was fine, but that was like, that's something that not a lot of people know that happened to him. And
he didn't tell me that story.
Yeah. I don't think he wanted many people to know. But yeah, so yeah, they got divorced in 1994, and of course we split up and sold the house. So my dad lived in a condo, and then I lived in a house with my mom. And you know, going through a divorce is, I don't wish it on any kid. But staying together for sake of your kids is not productive, right? So I'm glad that my parents got divorced. I'm really happy that they did get divorced. But not to say that it wasn't really traumatic, you know? I mean, it had a massive effect on me, you know? And so me personally, I went into a bit of a spiral at that age. I mean, even at like, you know, at 12 years old, sorry, I wasn't 14. I was 12 years old, right? 1994. And I started like coping. My coping mechanism was eating food. So it was like, we'd go to fast food and I would order, you know, two burgers and the large fry or whatever. And it was like, and so I just got really fat. Frankly, like I got really fat as a 12 year old. I was like, I was the fat kid, you know, when I was 12. And so, so through junior high and even through high school, I was still really like kind of like the fat kid until like junior year of high school and senior year. I sprouted up. I got a little taller. I got a little leaner and I started working out, doing more sports and stuff like that. And so I got made fun of less, you know, at that point. But we all get made fun of, right? In any school and high school and stuff. So that was the majority of my childhood, right? My younger years was happy, amazing. Family was together. I was also, you know, I had the naivete of like a child. And so I didn't know that there was turmoil in the house until really what hit me was when a process server came to the house to serve my dad with divorce papers. So my mom was the one who filed for divorce. And I remember vividly, like, my dad knew what was going down, right? My dad being in business for years, seeing what a process server looks and acts like, right? He saw that person come to the door and he's like, nope, fuck this. And he went and barricaded himself into the bathroom and because he didn't want to accept the letter, the package.
Right.
And so then the guy slid it under the door and said, Dan, you've been served. And that was when I knew. I was like, oh, okay, this is real. But still after that, I didn't believe it, right? And so I went through this period of denial where I was like, oh no, this is just some big joke. They're going to get back together. Everything's going to be fine. Wishful thinking as a 12-year-old, right? And so really, you know, going through that. So the first half of my childhood was like, great, you know, everything's fine. My parents are together and we would go on trips and vacations and, you know, do big family gatherings. We had big barbecues at the house. Like I remember vividly, like different holidays, Thanksgiving, right? We're coming up on Thanksgiving here. We're recording this right before Thanksgiving. Christmas, there was never anything to indicate that the world was going to fall apart shortly. And then the world did fall apart, right? And at 12 years old, you're in like a super formative period.
Right. And you had no brothers or sisters. So you're the only child.
Right.
And you're having to navigate through something that was extremely challenging for a 12-year-old to even understand, let alone try to navigate through. Plus, you are trying to live through this imagining this being not real. So you're really trying to kind of formulate a make-believe scenario where your parents don't get divorced and stay together. Yeah. So you're navigating through all that. And that's tough as a young child.
Yeah. So
go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off, but
no, that's okay. You know, what was really tough was the custody battle. That's the tough part. And hearing both sides of your parents tell you different stories. And even though they both had my best interest in mind, they're also self-serving. They want the best for me, but they also want the best for themselves.
Right.
So there was a lot of that push pull, like where you don't know which direction is the right direction. And you end up, you know, going to one set of, like you go to your mom's house and, you know, you have great things that happen there. And then you go to your dad's house and you have great things that happen there. But then when it comes to like custody, they're asking me, right? We had mediators in the court And the mediators are asking me, well, what do you want to do? I'm like, I don't fucking know. I'm 12.
Right. Right. Exactly. Right.
You know, and I'm like, well, let's see. What did dad buy me last week? Well, I want to go with dad. What did mom buy me last week? I want to go with mom. You know, and there was, there's such a short attention span when it comes to like, you know, logic and reasoning for a kid that like, you can't ask a kid that, you know, and I say kid, but 12 years old is a kid, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I had no idea what I really wanted. And ultimately, like the custody battle turned into, it was just 50-50. That's mm-hmm. how they worked it out. And it's like, you know, what you trade off weekends and then it's like, okay, every other holiday, this one goes to me and that one goes to, you know, and it's just like, it's just a weird scenario. It's a weird right. situation, you know, to live in. But they did the best they could. And, you know, I didn't come out all messed up.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. So now here you are, you're running a business. Let's talk a little bit about that. How are things going with you as far as your career now? Because you go through that experience and obviously, you know, half the kids in the United States go through, you know, divorce. So half the kids are going through what you went through, and having to deal with now they get two Christmases and all that kind of stuff. And that's cool, but it's still not a healthy environment. So you turned out okay. So what happened? I mean, how did that, I mean, obviously you have great parents, your mom's great. Your dad, you know, God rest his soul. He was great. I knew the man for a very, very long time and he taught me a lot. But so you have two great parents and they both have your best interest in heart in mind, but you're still going through this crap that you're going through. How does Steven Sterik manage to escape that, stay out of, you know, essentially stay out of trouble and, you know, be successful in what he's doing now?
Yeah. That's a good question. Cause you know, for a long time there, I wasn't successful, right? In life and in business, more so in life. So after my parents got divorced, my mom got remarried and my dad got remarried. And one of the things that was a savior for me, and I'm going to be open about it because I need to be, is my stepdad that my mom married. My stepdad was a second father to me. He was the one who taught me love, proper love, how to treat women, how to love a woman, how to love your family. And, you know, and I've told this to my dad's face in the past, like, so this is nothing new that he would have heard. Right. And I'm not like saying after the grave or anything like that. He would have known this stuff.
Let me interrupt you real fast, because the people that don't know who your dad is, I know exactly what you mean. Steven's dad is very old school, very old school guy. He loved his family. He loved his son, and would show affection at times, but he wasn't super affectionate. And that was very just kind of old school to him. So he loved the, I could see that his way of raising a kid was teaching him life, not necessarily giving him love, right?
100%.
That was his way of showing his love. I'm teaching you everything I know so you can be a winner. You can be successful when you grow up. I'm teaching you everything I know. That was his way of love. Mm-hmm. That wasn't what we think of love now as a dad, that I'm sure Steven is with his two daughters and the way that his stepdad was with him. Okay, go ahead. Carry on.
Yeah, no, 100%, man. And actually, I'm glad that you said that, because I mean, we can go on for hours about this stuff, but a quick snippet is you're absolutely right. So my dad's way of showing love was teaching me life skills. My dad taught me a lot about business, everything I knew up until he died, right? Everything I knew about business, I looked to my dad as like the oracle, which looking back on it now was a mistake. He was not the oracle, but he was really good. He was really good. In certain areas, he was really good. In certain areas, I learned a lot of what not to do as far as business stuff is concerned. So, and I do believe that we have many fathers in life, and many fathers being like my stepdad, for example. He was a father to me. I had friends of mine, like one of my closest friends. He's just a little bit older than me. He's about 10 years older than me. I consider him to be one of my fathers, right? One of my father figures as a role model. My father-in-law now, I consider him to be one of my fathers. So, you know, you take all of these parts of different people. It's and I'm an amalgamation of all of their characters and all of their traits that they've taught me over the last, whatever, 41 years that I've been rolling around this rock that we call Earth. Mm-hmm. However, to understand my dad and his parenting style, we have to understand slightly a bit about his background. Mm-hmm. He was born in former Yugoslavia, Serbia, Eastern European, heavily communist country at the mm-hmm. time. His dad, my grandfather, was a POW in the 1950s. I don't know if you remember or heard of the name Tito. Tito mm-hmm. was a dictator, communist dictator of Yugoslavia. My grandfather was a tailor. He used to make suits for people, right? Like you probably wear suits to the bank. He would make those suits. My grandfather used to make suits for Tito, for the president, the dictator.
That's cool.
And then a couple of years after that, he arrested him and put him into a prison camp.
Wow.
So the tables turned. He was a POW because he was a defector. He did not agree with the regime. So my dad didn't see his dad for 5 years of his life.
Hmm.
From the age of 4 to 9 years old. So my grandfather was imprisoned when my dad was 4. My grandfather escaped the prison camps and somehow made his way to New York, all the way from Yugoslavia. He went through Italy and he had some friends that he knew or something like that, got on a boat, sailed across the Atlantic, and landed in New York. And then ultimately set up shop in Chicago, where he started his own tailoring shop. He started a men's clothing store. And at that point, he brought my family over from Yugoslavia. So my dad, his sister, and his mom, my grandmother, were in Yugoslavia for like 2 years while grandpa was over here, stateside, setting up shop. My dad didn't see his dad from the age of 4 to 9 years old for 5 years. I mean, what that does to a person,
right?
I don't know. I didn't experience it, but I do know some stuff I read in some psychology books, and it's not good.
Right.
And so that's a bit of history about where my dad came from and the relationship that he had with his dad. My grandfather, like you can imagine what it takes to be in a prison camp, the type of person and the type of mentality you have to have, right? Mentally strong to escape from a prison camp.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was the tough love, show no love, like, mm-hmm. you know, punch you on the shoulder, like get it done, kid, you know, that right. kind of stuff.
Right. And that's so exactly how your dad was.
He was. And that was the example that he had growing up. So that's right. all he knew. That's all he knew, how to teach me how to be a dad or how to grow up and how to father me, was that same exact tough love. I'm going to teach you the skills on how to get through life, on how to succeed in life. The love part of it was like totally secondary. But as he grew older, he got a lot softer, and yeah. he started telling me he loved me a lot more, lot more often. And it was weird, man, because there were times with my dad where we would get into these huge fights, man, like knock down, like drag out, just like, I mean, almost like fist fighting.
Oh, well, you're a teenager. So
yeah, I am.
You're a teenager. And I mean, I think back to when I knew your dad, and I worked with Steven's dad, as he said, at the bank. And Steven was, when I started working with Dan, his dad, Steven was 14, and I ended up directly reporting to to Dan. Dan and I ran a department at the bank. It was an auto lending department. He and I ran this auto lending and truck department at the bank for many years. So he was in charge of the department. I was like his right-hand guy at the department. And we would go to lunch every single day. Like every day we were at lunch together. And he's like, Steven's driving me nuts. He's getting into trouble. Like that. He loved you, and he really was proud of who you were, but he was frustrated with the teenager in you.
Wow. And dude, I love hearing this, right? Because I don't have too many connections to like my dad's friends, right? My dad didn't have too many friends. He had a lot of work friends, right? You, Ed Milette, which he's, you know, Ed's not around anymore. Fred Sears, he's also not around anymore.
Yeah.
But you know, a handful of people that I don't really know, you know? So I like hearing stuff like this. I like hearing the little stories and like, you know, how you guys interacted and who he was on a day to day. I mean, you guys spent 8+ hours together every single day.
Every day. And I have to tell you, he taught me a lot about the auto industry, because what our department did, and this is kind of getting off a little tangent, but that's all right. What our department did was we made auto loans for dealerships. We wrote up the paper that dealerships would send in to us for customers. And so we ran that department for a long time, but we also in the evening were kind of in charge of the collection side of things too. So we had a handful of collectors that worked with us, and typically I would stay, Dan would be there for a while, but then he would take off, but I would stay with the collectors and they'd collect on the auto loans. And we did a lot of repossessions of cars.
I remember, you know,
a lot of repossessions. And Dan and I had this way of maneuvering the cars that we repoed to the bank. We would bring them to the bank, and then Dan and I had a way of just kind of enjoying the rides that we repoed. So, you know, we'd get a car back and it would be one of the nice cars, you know, like Dan had for whatever reason, we had this Porsche Boxster that was always around, and Dan always had to drive that thing. But we had these cars, you know, whether it was a Lexus or a Mercedes or a Porsche, and we would always just like, hey, we repoed the car. It's here. The bank owns it. We might as well just use it as a company car now. So we had that kind of funny way of taking care of the cars that we repoed. But
dude, can I tell you something?
Huh?
I drove a lot of those cars.
I'm sure you did, because he brought them. He drove them all the time, and I drove them too. I used to drive them too. My boys were not old enough to drive yet, but I used to drive them too. I had a convertible BMW for a while. I drove the Porsche Boxers, a yellow Porsche Boxer that you probably remember.
Dude, I ripped that thing. I was only 15. I ripped that thing around the neighborhood. Don't tell the bank. Don't tell. They're not going to watch this, are they?
No. So anyways, I know that's a little bit of a tangent, but that's just kind of one of the funny things that that Dan kind of showed me around auto business goes. But
I love that. So yeah, you guys spent a lot of time together too, and I think that's really cool that, you know, you got to enjoy and experience that side of the relationship, you know, with him, and I'm on the other side causing all the trouble that you guys are talking at lunch about.
Yeah, he would here's the thing. He would never talk bad about you. He would talk in frustration, right? Like as parents, I tell the dads, I coach a lot of dads, and some of the dads I tell, look, it's okay. It's okay to be frustrated. It's okay to be disappointed in your kids, but it's how you respond and how you react to those disappointments and frustrations towards your kids that really sends the message. Yeah. So if you're frustrated and disappointed that it causes you to be angry and resentful towards your kids are going to sense that.
Of course.
So he was not that type of person. He was very frustrated and disappointed, but it would come from a good place. Right. Mm. And it was almost like I was his, because I was with him all day long. Right. So it was almost like I was just a venting board for him to just vent to. Right.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything. I mean, I had two young kids. I didn't know what it was like to have a teenager. I had two young kids at the time. So I would just sit there and let him vent, and, you know, and we would enjoy our lunch free from the bank. So, we had, you know, all expenses, you know, we had these expense accounts that the bank just didn't care about. And we would go to lunch every single day and put it on the bank. And there was just a lot of stuff that we did together.
That's awesome, man.
But
it's cool that you guys have those good memories too.
Yeah, I really respected him and the things that he not only did as a person, but the businessman in him. He was super. I mean, I'm telling you guys, for those of you that are watching, I mean, I'm sure 90% of you or 99% of you have never met Dan Starick, but he was a brilliant man. This dude was so smart and just had a wealth of knowledge, and you could go to him and ask him anything. And if he didn't know the answer, he'd make you think he knew the answer. That's how he was. Right. Right?
Dude, so, the, you know what? The apple does not fall far from the tree with that one.
So I want to ask you though, because, you know, we're talking a lot about your dad. What's the business that you're in now, and how did that translate from what your dad has taught you?
Interesting you say that. So I think one of the reasons why I'm going to back this up for a second. I think one of the reasons why my dad didn't leave me anything when he died is because he knew I could handle it.
Mm.
He knew that I would be just fine. I would find my way and make my way. And he left everything to my stepmom and my half brother because he knew they needed more help than I did.
Interesting.
My dad gave me a lot of skills when it came to business. And one of the biggest skills that he gave me is being resourceful and resilient.
Hmm.
He taught me how to find answers. I recently took this personality test that's like, it's not one of these like online, like gimmicky things. It's like a real deal.
Right.
You know, like you pay for it and it's done by a university and stuff. And the number one trait that they found in me was researcher.
Hmm.
Because I find answers. I find solutions to problems. And that's just part of who I am. But it's part of who I am because he instilled that within me.
He was definitely that guy.
Yeah.
He was definitely the researcher. He definitely wanted to know everything that he could know.
Yeah. Right. Sometimes to a fault. And I'm the same way. Like I'm in the weeds so deep, I can't see, you know, the top of the lake. I'm just down at the bottom, you know, scratching through the weeds, unfortunately. But it's also a superpower. Right. So as far as where I've gone and what I've done and where I'm at with business, I've had a lot of different businesses. I've tried a lot of different things. Where we currently are in business is a handful of different things, real estate being one of them, but just on the investment side, on the passive investment side. So my dad and I were in the mortgage business for a number of years. I started with him in 2004, 2005, and we did commercial loans, right? Just like what you guys did at the bank. We did commercial stuff. We also did residential stuff, a lot of refis for people. And we also did some regular real estate transactions like residential purchases and things like that. So he taught me the entire business. And then up until about 2010, everything was going really well, right? 2009, everything started falling apart. We didn't reinvent ourselves. 2010, we basically shut the doors of our company. And from that point, I had to go figure out what I was going to go do. I went to work for another mortgage company at the time that had inbound leads. And I was literally on the phone just like all day long trying to close people with refiing their house. Got burnt out on that. And I ended up, I took a month off and I went to Europe. I went backpacking around Europe and I quote unquote found myself. It was a great time, man. It was a lot of fun. When I came back though, I realized I didn't have shit to show for it. And I didn't have any money. And so at the time I was living in a condo complex. My friend also lived next door to me and he owned a construction company. So I was like, hey, I need a job. He's like, cool, show up Monday, 7 a.m. So I literally went from this high of being in the mortgage business, making really good money, doing real estate and all that stuff. I mean, I don't know if you knew about this or not, but my dad and I and one other partner were going to break ground on a 100-unit apartment complex. Did he ever tell you about that?
Mm-mm.
We had a 100-unit apartment complex in Merced, just outside of Fresno.
Right.
We owned the land. The plans were approved. The permits were pulled. And we couldn't get construction financing to save our asses. The lending guidelines changed with every bank during that time.
Right.
And we had to bring a lot more cash to the table in order for us to get approved for a construction loan. And we didn't have the cash. Our mortgage business was failing. So we had to let that property go back to the bank.
Mm.
It was literally ready to go. It was like, we even had the contractor lined up. I bought a house next door to the property and I moved all of my stuff. I was living in Camarillo at the time. loaded up a big moving van, moved all of my stuff to Merced, and I was going to live there to manage.
Yeah,
to manage the construction process. I wasn't going to manage like the construction.
Yeah,
I was gonna
you just wanted to make sure everything's going the way it's supposed to be going.
I literally moved there. And I lost that house too. So I was a signer on that loan. I was upside down $200,000 on that house. And then we had to let the other property go back to the bank. I mean, dude, 100-unit apartment complex when we were 2 miles away from the brand new University of California Merced.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. part of it was going to be student housing.
That apartment complex would have pretty much taken care of you guys.
For a very, very long time.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the point is we lost our asses. And now I'm asking my buddy for a job in his construction company, at his roofing company. And Monday morning I get to the job, or I get to the office, and he's like, cool, you're going to go out to whatever, this place in LA, go get in the truck with the dude. So now I'm the helper sitting in the passenger seat of the truck, making a little over minimum wage.
Mm.
So huge high, humbling low. And I'm like, man, okay, well, what do I do now? So I worked my way through that company, like up, got promoted, ended up working in their office, doing estimating and all kinds of different stuff. And then their business started to slow down as well from the economy. So they had to let me go. So I got laid off there and I started working on motorcycles out of my house because I had a bunch of motorcycles.
That's one extreme to the other, brother.
Yeah. Yeah, man. So I had a bunch of motorcycles and a couple buddies. It was like three of us dudes in a bachelor pad, this big house. And between the three of us, we had two dogs and about 16 motorcycles in the garage. It was awesome. It was so awesome. Like party house. It was great. So I started working on bikes for money. Right. And people are coming and I got bikes and everything's stacking up. I got bikes in the backyard and like everywhere. I'm exploding with motorcycle parts. And then I get a visit from the owner of the motorcycle shop in town, a big heavy line dealership, big owner. I'm like, oh, I know who this guy is, 'cause I go and buy parts there all the time. And he's like, hey, man, what are you doing over here? You know, and he gets all curious. And he starts poking around and stuff. So then he offers me a deal to shut the company down and come work for him. So I came work for him. I was a lead mechanic for them for a little while. Went to all the different schools, the Yamaha and all that stuff. Got trained up, factory certified technician. Then I met this other dude who wanted to, he was kind of doing the same thing as I was. So we partnered. And we opened up two motorcycle shops. We opened one motorcycle shop that was too small, quickly realized it was too small, and we got into another one. And so now I'm a business owner, right? I've got this big motorcycle shop with a partner of mine, and things are rolling, except we didn't make any money. We didn't make any money at all, right? Because everybody in the motorcycle business, well, we were also young, right? So I'm not going to blame everybody else. I can blame myself because I didn't know how to run a business the right way.
Right.
But everybody in motorcycles, we were working in dirt bikes, and a lot of the dirt world, people don't really have that much money. It's like feast or famine, and just take care of your family. And it's a very family oriented sport, which I love. But everybody is your homie, your dog, your bro, your buddy, your whatever, you know, and friendship doesn't keep the lights on. So what I ended up doing was I sold my half to my business partner and I got out. It was about that time that I got back into construction. So my wife and I got married in 2016. My father-in-law came to me and he had a very successful construction company that he started in the 70s.
Hmm.
My father-in-law came to me and he said, hey, got some big projects coming up and I could use your help managing them. You know, you know how to manage stuff, so come on. And after about 2 years, he invited me to become a partner in the company. And we still have that company to this day. So we have a residential construction company. Although we're winding that company down. My father-in-law is of retirement age and he still wants to go a little bit more. But at the same time, it's time for him to retire, relax and enjoy, you know, his golden years. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to share his age because he doesn't like it being shared, but you know, my father-in-law is very much a virile young man, despite his age. Mm. And he's got a lot of life left to live. And so, we've slowly wound down the construction company. We've still got one project in the wings that we're hoping to start, but the owners of the house are part of that whole writer's strike and stuff like that. Anyway, that's a side tangent. But the other thing that I'm really into these days is artificial intelligence, is AI. I really, really love it. And I might bounce around here a little bit, but if you told me 6 months ago that I was going to start an AI-powered marketing agency, I would have told you, not me. Who's that? Right. Somebody else, right?
Right.
And here I am, right? In August, I discovered this like revolutionary thing that these developers were working on, and I cut a deal with them to partner. And here we are with an AI-powered chatbot that we can put into any business and help it nurture leads and make sales 24/7 without fail, with no human error whatsoever.
Mm.
It'll text people, it'll email people, it'll even do social media messengers. So like Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn. And so that's what we're working on now. And it's been very successful. We soft launched it about 3 weeks ago. And we have a number of clients, and I've got people coming from all over the place, you know, calling me, asking me now for special projects. People want to partner on other special projects that they want to implement AI into their businesses. And I'm super excited about it because AI is the next revolution of this world.
Right.
We had the farming revolution, the industrial revolution, and then fast forward, right? Computer, digital age. Fast forward to the internet revolution. Now we have the AI revolution that is going to absolutely dwarf what the internet did for the world.
Yeah.
The face of the planet is going to look wildly different in the next 5 years because of AI.
I think it's pretty remarkable that you go from this kid that was trying to learn real estate to then learning construction to then motorcycles to then construction to then AI.
I didn't tell you about trucking. During COVID, I started a trucking company because like I needed another hole in my head.
Oh man. Well, let's do this because I want to keep you on track because I know you have another appointment coming up, but we've talked a lot about, you know, your dad and kind of this, how you grew up and stuff, but what about your family? Tell me about your kids.
So I am happily married to my wife since 2016, and we have two beautiful daughters, 3 and 6. The 6-year-old is a spitting image of me, but her personality is in the full likeness of my wife. And then the 3-year-old is the opposite, looks like my wife, but is a spitting image of me as a personality. And she's a risk taker. She's the one who's like climbing on the top of the couch, trying to jump off, hurl herself off of anything she can possibly find. And we love it, man. We live in Ventura now. So we moved from, we were in the Simi Valley, Thousand Oaks area. And if anybody listening knows where that is, it is not too far away, but it is a world apart.
Right.
And we absolutely love Ventura. We moved here about 2 years ago, and we figuratively and literally leveled up our lives.
Oh, that's cool.
Everything, there was a pivotal shift. I'll say everything changed when we moved to Ventura. There was a pivotal shift in mindset when we moved to Ventura. But I'll also say that a mindset shift happened when I started getting into these different mastermind groups, different business groups. Before we were on camera, we were talking about a mutual friend of ours that I had met in a business group. And I finally feel like I've found my people.
Mm-hmm.
I've been kind of like floating through life for so long with friendships and relationships that haven't quite aligned with what I know my purpose and my progress is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I digress. But if anybody out there is looking like to level up or looking to like find their tribe or anything like that, and they're in business, I highly suggest you get around paid groups where you can be in a room with people who do the same stuff, like-minded people, right? Whether that's real estate, business, e-commerce, whatever kind of stuff you're into, pay to be in the rooms. It'll level you up. It's definitely the shortcut, I'll tell you that much. But anyway, back to dad stuff. So So yeah, that's what my family looks like. My mom is still around. My mom actually lives in France now.
She did, huh?
She moved to France. That's a whole nother story in and right. of itself. We could write a book about her life too. So my mom's actually here visiting right now. She's in the other room watching the kiddos because they're off school today. And we have an extra room in our house. When we bought this house, we purposely bought a house with an extra room so my mom could live with us. My mom and my stepdad from France could live with us for months at a time. So they come for the holidays every winter. They come for like almost 3 months because my father-in-law, or sorry, my stepdad, he's on a visitor visa. So he can only stay 89 days in the US at a time.
That's cool.
So that's what the family dynamic looks like. My father-in-law and my mother-in-law, they're amazing people. They live in Thousand Oaks. They're not far from us. They're very involved in the kids' lives. They're very involved in our lives, and we have a very, very strong family bond. We go on vacations together, which is not a lot of people go on vacations with their in-laws or their parents, you know, but we do that as well. So
that's cool. I want to ask you one last question and then I'm going to let you go. But when it comes to your own kids, because here you are, dad of two young girls, with the lifestyle and the way that you were raised and brought up, what have you implemented as a dad that maybe your dad taught you or didn't teach you?
That's a great question. So I was scared shitless to have a boy.
Okay.
I don't have boys. I don't have boys, you know, that I know of. I was scared shitless to have a boy.
Okay.
Because I was afraid I was going to father him like my dad fathered me.
Mm.
But what I realized is that it doesn't matter what kind of kid you have, even if it's a boy or girl, you're going to be the father that you are.
Right.
But the important thing to remember is that we have the power to change every reaction that we're living through.
Correct.
So one thing that my dad taught me that I'm definitely using now that my kids are getting old, well, a little older, right? My six-year-old, she's starting to understand money and business. And I show her what I do. I show her that I don't work for anyone else. I show her that what that means. And I show her that's how that's very different from the majority of the world out there that has a job that they go to. And so definitely passing that part of it down. One thing that I do that my dad didn't do necessarily is I am like overly loving almost, where I'm like multiple times a day, I'm telling him I love you. And it's funny you asked this question because yesterday I picked up the six-year-old, the tall one. I picked her up from school and we were driving to art class. And quiet in the truck, she's eating her snacks on the way, and I'm like, hey, yeah, I love you. She's like, why do you always say that to me? I'm like, okay, it's already starting and you're six, right? You know, but to a point where I'm like telling her I love her so much that she's like, I know, dad.
Right.
I'd rather her say I know, dad, then you never tell me you love me.
Right.
Then wonder.
Yeah.
I get choked up thinking about this because you have boys and I have girls, but I know that our kids always look for love as their parents loved them.
Mm-hmm.
My daughters are going to look for a partner who mimics my style of loving them.
Right.
It's my obligation and my duty as a father to love them the best way possible so they don't end up with some shit bag.
Right.
That's my sole purpose in raising them, is to give them the tools to like skill them up so that way they can live their lives successfully, whatever successfully means to them. But also so I don't raise them and love them in such a damaged way that they end up in some abusive relationship.
Right. Yeah. We have a responsibility as parents too, and it doesn't matter if you have a son or a daughter, but we have a responsibility as parents to raise our treat our daughter as we would want them to be treated.
Yeah.
when they get older. And it's the same is true with, you know, how we treat our spouses. We want to show our kids, sons or daughters, how a woman should be treated. And that's how we treat our spouse. Right. Yeah. And the same is true for our sons. We want our sons to see how a man should be treated.
Yeah.
With how our wife treats us or how we treat our kids, our boys. Yeah. So you're exactly right. And I know that just in, you know, you and I have been, we recently got reconnected over the last year or so, but you and I have obviously known each other for a very long time. And just knowing you, especially reconnecting with you over the last year or so, I can sense that about you and through your, you know, social media posts and all that, that family is very important to you. And that was a lesson that maybe in his own little way, your dad did teach you that family is important. And I knew that about your dad, as much as he may not have shown his love the ways that we would have liked or that you would have liked as a young boy, he loved the hell out of his kid.
Yeah.
He loved the hell out of his family, and he would go to the ends of the earth and do everything he could to protect them and help them.
He did.
And so that was the kind of man he was. And I know that that's the kind of person that you are to your own kids. Steven, I know you have to go, but I want to give you an opportunity to share anything, that any way that my listeners, viewers can look you up, learn a little bit more about you. What's the best places for them to do that?
Cool. Yeah. I appreciate that, Brian. So on all the socials, it's just Steven Sterik, just my name. That's it. You can also, if you really want to check out our AI website, it's mysalesbot.io. And if you want to learn about AI or anything like that, hit me up on the socials. I'm happy to share, anything about how AI can, you know, help us create a better world. I know there's a lot of people that are scared about AI and what's going to happen in the future, but it's here to help as long as that, you know, we use it responsibly, of course. But yeah, if you want to learn any more about that kind of stuff or anything at all, hit me up. I'm an open book.
Cool. I'll make sure to have that all in the show notes. Look at Steven. I'm thrilled that we have reconnected. I think your dad would have loved seeing this kind of conversation and hearing about it. So I'm thrilled that we were able to reconnect, and I'm looking forward to continuing the friendship, brother.
Me too, man. I really appreciate your time too.
Yeah. Listen, guys, it's been another phenomenal episode of Dad Up. Make sure you guys look at the show notes. You can hit the links to maybe check out, see what Steven's doing. If you want to learn a little more about what he's doing or about AI, any of those types of things in the show notes. And if you have not yet subscribed to my show, please make sure you do that so you don't miss any of the awesome guests I have on each and every week. And as always, I look forward to seeing you all on the next episode of Dad Up.
Wow, another amazing episode in the books. So much was shared, and I'm truly grateful my guest was able to pour into you to help you elevate your dad game and really dad up. Make sure you bang that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode. And while you're here, please don't forget to leave me a rating and a review. I always appreciate the feedback. Also, did you know you can watch the video interview of this episode? You can by simply going to my YouTube channel at Dad Up Podcast. Please don't forget to subscribe to my channel. And one last thing, don't forget, your role as a dad is one of the most important roles you have. So if you need a little help or have questions, don't hesitate to reach out to me on my website at daduptribe.com or at my Instagram page at Dad Up Podcast. Until next time, everyone, Dad Up.